live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, an awful lot of important information. My guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Shuwei Yin Lo. He is a theoretical physicist under the Nobel laureate Dr. Yoichiro Onembu at the world-renowned University of Chicago Physics Department. And we're going to talk about the biophysics behind double helix water and its healing properties. We've heard it offered in premiums. Is it true? Is it oversold? Is it hyped? What kind of financial interest does this person have? How objective can someone be who says that something will cure something if they're also being paid on the other end? I believe it's time that we took a look at this in depth to see what's the truth of it and what is exaggeration. And what if there is truth that some other people are exaggerating for their own economic ends? We've seen that, especially with wild oregano oil. Yeah, it does some good stuff, but not at the level that we are told by those trying to sell it to us. From Caroline Arnold from Common Dreams, who will write the scripts for our future? A little commentary, but an important one. Because we lost a major effort in stopping food that would be genetically engineered from coming in as if it were the same as regular grown food, Bernie Sanders wanted to label it, and it was voted down by the majority of people, both Democrat and Republican. Why? Why didn't they understand why we needed this labeled? So I'm going to share information each day this week, and a lot of it, all science-based. I hope that you pass this on this to your legislator. Also, I'm very concerned that the governor of our state has not heard enough from us, who are residents of New York, and concerned that opening up one part of the state means, in effect, you open up the entire state. I believe that if he is sincere in wanting to protect the water supply, which is one of the most abundant and pure water supplies in America coming out of New York, he doesn't understand. Maybe he has just been left only to hear one side. But today, we will tell you why we shouldn't have any hydrofracking in New York and how all the so-called science is all a lie, that we can keep the water clean, that it won't pollute aquifers, that it doesn't leak. It does all the above. And this will be a clip that you haven't seen yet, and we'll get into this and then open it up for some calls. As you see, we have a lot to cover, so let us begin. Always with the latest on health and healing, because we all deserve to be living a longer, healthier life. This is based upon the Mayo Clinic research, and it talks about sick from your stomach, quote, bacterial changes may trigger diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. Quote, a lot of people suspect that gut flora play a role in rheumatoid arthritis, but no one had been able to prove it because they couldn't say which came first, the bacteria or the gene. This is one of the immunologists. Well, we disagree with that. Earlier this year, in the month of January, for just 4 weeks, we took a group of individuals from this audience who had arthritis for an average of 7 years. All except one of these individuals were on medications, and some were on multiple medications with no relief. The oldest, I think, had been on meds and diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis for over 27 years. Some had frozen necks, couldn't move their necks. Others had frozen hands. And by changing the diet, including a great deal of new healthy probiotics, the good bacteria flooding their system, the elimination of everything creates bad bacteria. Those who stuck with the protocol, which is about half, one group acted as a control. They came to all the lectures, they got all the input, they just didn't apply it. Those that did apply it, there was a 97% reduction or complete elimination of all their arthritic symptoms. A 3-month follow-up set found that they were even getting better. So we know the role of good bacteria. It's essential for a simple reason. You have 10 to 100 times more bacteria in your body than you have cells. And we know that your thought can change a DNA, positive or negative, turn it on or off. We know that the people that you associate in your life can do the same. Good people, good vibrations, happy, laughing, passionate, pleasure, creativity, joy, all of that enhances our well-being. Negativity, sarcasm, bitterness, anger, retaliation, all turns off the DNA, closes the door, locks it up, causes disease. Every single study shows that through psychoneuroimmunology, psycho meaning your brain, neuro meaning your nervous system, immunology, your immune system, that when you think a good thought, eat a good food, when you're around good people in a good environment, you are in effect manifesting wellness. When you do just the opposite, you're manifesting disease. So why didn't the people from the Mayo Clinic just have just a 1% common sense? To me, at this point, it's so embarrassing to realize how absolutely intellectually advanced people are and how lacking in common sense those same individuals are. If you know that good bacteria and bad bacteria can manifest, you say it here. Sick in your stomach, bacterial changes may trigger disease like rheumatoid arthritis. Then why didn't you take another step back? Instead of blaming the gene, blame the diet. It's not the gene that's doing diddly squat. But then again, your money comes from gene research, doesn't it? Your background is in immunology, isn't it? So everything you see, everything you speak, everything you understand has to be genetically connected. Well, what if we're not biased by that limitation? And just say, hey, you want to eat some sugar? Watch what happens to the bacteria. You're going to multiply the bad bacteria. You're going to end up with the yeast. You're going to end up with candida. You're going to end up... Want to eat that putrefied meat? There goes the bad bacteria. Want to drink some alcohol? You're just killing all the good bacteria, manifesting bad bacteria. How about that genetically engineered food? There goes that bad bacteria. They refuse to pull back and see the whole picture so they can spend a career making lots of money, getting lots of research papers published, as if 1,000 tiny little pieces pulled together this puzzle. It doesn't. At some point, people who claim to be intellects and claim to be scientists, you're going to actually have to act like a human being, because we're all kind of sick of it, sick of this piecemeal, fragmented, monotheistic way of living, thinking, acting as if somehow you're bright. You're not, friend. Get over yourself. So the next time I read one of these articles, if I don't see that these people have put at least two pieces of the puzzle together, I'm not going to share it with you, because I'm just sick of the Mayo Clinic, these other people who just seem to lack completely in thinking anything outside of the gene. It's the gene, it's the gene. Is it? Well, if it's a gene, then why is it we can reverse autism and you can't? We've done it. You haven't. You get the money. You get the awards. You get all the notice. We don't get anything. And you don't have the decency and humility to ask any of the medical doctors, the scientists, the homemakers, the family members who have actually reversed it. How'd you do it? Well, maybe they looked at their kid as a whole person. And the diet is a very important part of that. And not changing the DNA, the gene, but changing the diet, the behavior, methylation, all the other things. And suddenly you got a whole, healthy, happy kid again. And they can't see it. Why not? Because they're rewarded for their effort, not for their results. But isn't that true about everything in life today? Effort, not results. Next up, and by the way, that whole study which we filmed beginning to end, that'll be coming at you as an important documentary in 2 months. And the paper that we wrote that went out for independent peer review that's out there now, and it's been picked up, and I'll let you know where it's being published and a scientific conference that I'll be presenting it at later in the fall. The omega-3 anti-inflammatory potential shows in overweight. This is a new study. We mentioned one last week that shows that the more the omega-3 fatty acids that you're consuming, the better it is for turning off inflammation. This came from Ohio State University, Professor Glazier. They found that when they were able to give them the omega-3 fatty acids at about 2.5 grams per day, that's 2,500 milligrams, that's in the middle, that's not high, that's not low, they substantially reduced a person's being overweight in this case, by 47%, who were obese, but when they started doing this, their level, their percentage of body fat reduced, but also they were able to turn off inflammation in the body in these overweight people, because all overweight people have inflammation. In this case, it was cytokine tumor necrosis factor alpha, or TNF-alpha. It decreased, and that's good. Had they added vitamin C with the omega-3 fatty acid, it would have decreased more. Had they add IP6, even more. And they added the beta-glucan, even more. So they could have added maybe 10 things, including 10,000 milligrams of curcuminoids and curcumin, and then they'd have solved this just a big drop in inflammation. In fact, you could turn off almost all the inflammation in a person's body if you just are consistent in getting as many anti-inflammatories. For most people, two of the easiest anti-inflammatories to get in each day, apple juice, the whole apple, and very important, apple juice, cabbage juice, and blueberry all together. Juice it and then drink that down. That is very powerful anti-inflammatory for ulcers, for colitis, for Crohn's disease, for irritable bowel, for diverticulitis. That's also good for rheumatoid arthritis. It's turning off inflammation. Research now shows that stimulation during sleep can enhance skill learning. This is from Northwestern University. And what this shows is that in this study, research participants learned how to play two artificially generated musical tunes with well-timed key presses. Then while the participants took a 90-minute nap, the researchers presented one of the tunes that had been practiced but not the other. Quote, our results extend prior research by showing that external stimulation during sleep can influence a complex process. Well, there's another way of doing this. What about before you went to bed, you listened to something that motivated you, inspired you, enhanced you in some way, and that was the last thought you had before you drifted into sleep. That also works. And that also can mean it's doing something that is an old ritual. I learned this when I was a kid, and everyone did it that I knew. You wrote down on a piece of paper a sentence that describes what it is that you would like to change. You think about it, you read it, you think about it, you put it under your pillow. It's just a ritual. But what happens is that's the last thought you have, something positive that you want to see changed. And then that's the what the brain begins to work on when you go into your deep rapid eye movement sleep. So instead of watching television or working until you go to sleep, set aside 10 to 15 minutes to put something positive that you can think about, you can listen to before you go to sleep. Also, they're now finding that boosting your blood system protein complex protects against radiation toxicity. This was done at Cincinnati's Children's Hospital, published in Nature magazine. What they found that there is a way to get good quality proteins into your body, and I'm suggesting the branched-chain amino acids, if you're going to be exposed to any radiation. Now, I would also do that with vitamin C. Both of those together help reduce the harmful effects of radiation. Also, a new study from Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory, I just drove by that the other day on my way out to a lecture on Long Island, and here's what it says. It says, the human gut is home to a teeming ecosystem of microbes that is intimately involved in both human health and disease. But while the gut microbiota is interacting with our body, they are also under constant attack from viruses. In a study published online in Genome Research, researchers analyzed the bacterial immune system, revealing a common set of viruses associated with gut microflora in global populations. And the viruses that prey on bacteria, called phages, pose a constant threat to the health of bacterial communities. And in many ecological systems, viruses outnumber bacteria cells 10 to 1. Given the richness of bacteria in the human gut, it was not surprising that scientists have found that phages are highly prevalent. Okay, then what do you do about all these viruses? They didn't have any suggestions here, just to show the phenomena. Well, let's go to the solutions. All right? How about herpes virus, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, hepatitis virus. There are thousands of viruses. Why not just each day have some things that are antiviral? That way the virus load goes down, and then feeding the gut good food and good fiber and good bacteria brings it up. Now you put the body into a positive homeostasis. Now, what are good ways to get rid of viruses? I'm not talking about intravenous vitamin C and vitamin A, which would be a great way. I'm talking about things you can easily and inexpensively do. For example, how about taking some juice in the morning? Your best juice against viruses would be lemon, lime, the whole lemon, lime, skin, and seed, powerful, powerful nutrients and oils in there, grapefruit, and then spike that with three things: echinacea, strongly antiviral, garlic, onion, wild oregano oil, and olive leaf extract, vitamin C. Now, you can blend that with some protein so it's palatable, but you drink that down and you're killing a lot of viruses. And then take something with some good probiotic in it. Now you're building up the good bacteria. So you shift the whole balance. Something that simple, once a day, an antiviral. Or do what I do occasionally. I do it rather frequently. Whether it's a baked potato or some brown rice or some beans, just gently, very gently saute until it's just transparent, but not dark. Garlic and a lot of it, and then mix that into your potato or to your rice or to your beans and have that. That'll knock out an awful lot of viruses and reestablish healthy bacterial flora. So those are some things we can do and that we should be doing on a regular basis. Now just a few brief commentaries, then we're going to go to our guest, and then you can share your opinions about this. I'm sure many people in this audience are concerned about our future. And a lot of people are concerned about today because they're suffering today. This is from Caroline Arnold, and she says the following. It was 9 years ago, 10 years ago, since they went into Iraq, and it says this: with President Obama collaborating with Israel on cyber warfare against Iran and protecting his presidential kill list from public scrutiny while asserting that anyone who gets in his way, in the way of our drones, must deserve to die, we should be asking a similar question. Will no one come into the light of public politics with a vision of our future not based upon scripts written for political or economic war? Or to put it another way, is there any way for we, the people, to free ourselves from these scripts and take control of our government? Which brings us face to face with a pair of fundamental questions. Who are we? And what do we want to do? These questions deal with identity, vision, and values. And answering the first one stops us cold. Most of us define we by those who are not we and who we want excluded from participation in our civil society, in government. We don't want immigrants and gays, non-Christians and socialists, progressives and Arabs, poor people and drug addicts, union members and strangers of any color or conviction. In 2010, the United Nations, or Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, decreed that we the people included corporations and money itself, entitled to the same free speech granted to individuals by the First Amendment. And now our political system, designed to be controlled by we, the people, is largely controlled by money. George Montabaud in The Guardian recently observed, quote, political systems that were supposed to represent everyone now return governments of millionaires financed by and acting on behalf of billionaires. And their money is mostly invested in advertising that drives programming about sex, sin, celebrities with headlines, news about Jerry Sandusky, and IPOs for cyber media systems. Advertising that sells goods for glorifying violence, vengeance, and the violation of persons and properties. Their money buys advertising to propagate myths. People are poor because, well, they're lazy. Schools can be run more cheaply by private sectors. We the people are incompetent to decide our own children's needs in the way of education, schools. And as a result, schools become bad because teachers' unions protect bad teachers. Iran's effort to produce nuclear war power is more threatening to world security than Israel's 200 nuclear warheads or the United States' 5,000 warheads. Isn't it getting ridiculous? End quote. You bet it is. And for a lot of people, Caroline, Arnold, we have answers. You're assuming that there's only a left and a right, corporatized. What about Dr. Jill Stein? What about Rocky Anderson? What about Gary Johnson? What about all the people representing millions of others who believe that we shouldn't be in wars? We should honor all life. We should not discriminate against a person because of their sexual preference or because of their body politics. We should honor that diversity. What about those people who are out there now marching to close down nuclear plants and to protect your food supply? There are people out there. Maybe you're not connected with them. Maybe you're frustrated by what you see. But if you only watch the mainstream media, you won't see or hear any of these voices. You won't see the positive solutions. You won't see the demonstrations against all that is wrong to try to show what can be right. So I hope that, Caroline, that you realize people by the millions today are writing new scripts, and they are positive. Now, before we go to our guest, let me just share a few thoughts on genetic engineering. As you know, we are now trying in every state to have referendums so that the state can label this. It would have been so much easier had the federal government been mandated to guarantee labeling of genetically engineered food, because then it wouldn't have been a state issue. It would have been a federal issue, but they voted it down, and it was voted down unanimously. And then you have to ask, why? Were these politicians ignorant of the true nature of genetic engineering of our food? Or were they fully aware of it, but they had received campaign contributions from ALEC-related groups and genetic engineering companies? That we cannot answer at this time. All we can tell you is genetically engineered everything is bad to the bone. And we say that based upon good science, independent science, that is never allowed to come forward at the federal or state level and tell you why it is toxic. But we will now. This is from India Today, from Dinesh Sharma. Toxin from genetically modified crops found in human blood. This is a new study that you have not heard about. I'm breaking this exclusively right now. BT toxin is widely used in genetically modified crops. Now, this audience knows that. Well, fresh doubts have arisen about the safety of genetically modified crops, with a new study reporting that, quote, BT toxin used widely in GM crops in human blood for the first time. Let me quote this. Genetically modified crops, including genes extracted from bacteria to make them resistant to pest attacks. These genes make crops toxic to pests, but are claimed to pose no danger to the environment or human health. Genetically modified brinjal, whose commercial release was stopped a year ago, has a toxin derived from a soil bacterium called BT. Till now, scientists and multinational corporations promoting genetically modified crops have maintained that BT toxin poses no danger to human health as the protein breaks down in the human gut. But the presence of this toxin now in human blood shows that this does not happen. It does not break down harmlessly. They have no science on their side. Here's the real science. Quote, scientists in the University of Sherbrooke in Canada have detected the insecticidal protein CRY1AB circulating in the blood of pregnant as well as non-pregnant women. They have also detected the toxin in fetal blood, implying it can pass on to the next generation. The research paper has been peer-reviewed and accepted for publication in the journal Reproductive Toxicology. The study covered 30 pregnant women and 39 women who had come from tubectomy at the Center for Hospitalier University at Sherbrooke in Quebec. None of them had worked or lived with a spouse working in contact with pesticides. They were all consuming typical diets that included genetically modified soybeans, corn, or potatoes. Blood samples were taken before delivery for pregnant women and at a tubal ligation for non-pregnant women. Umbilical cord blood was sampled as well at birth. The CRY1AB toxin was detected in 93% and 80% of the maternal fetal blood samples respectively, and 69% tested blood samples for non-pregnant women. So what do we have? Here's the takeaway from this. Monsanto and all the other industries say, and the FDA, oh, GM crops pose no threat. They're not going to end up in your blood. Wrong. They've ended up in the blood. Independently confirmed, peer-reviewed journal, big study, blood toxins in your blood, bad news. So they were wrong. Hammer them on it, all right? Because now they're screwing with our babies and generations to come, and they're liars. All of them are liars. Call them out on it. Now, here's another thing that you have not heard about. I'll share it to you today. This just happened down in Texas. This is a mysterious mass cattle death. Why? Quote, once a farmer walked onto his 80-acre ranch in Elgin and found all his cattle dead or dying. And they brought in a vet, and the vet did a complete autopsies on these and found, quote, the grass is a genetically modified form of Bermuda known as Tifton 85, which has been growing there. Quote, suddenly the grass has started producing cyanide gas and poisoning the cattle, end quote. Genetically modified grass, and now it's changed, it's genetically jumped, and that grass is now producing cyanide? All right. Another one of those, isn't our genetically modified seed great? No, not when you just killed a whole bunch of cattle and now all the cattlemen in Texas are freaking out because they were using this genetically modified grass. And finally, just for today, this is from EchoWatch. Genetic engineers explain why genetically engineered food is dangerous. I'll quote this. This is just the science. A new report just out this week, GMO Myth and Truth, challenges all the claims about that it's healthy or it's safe. These are all peer-reviewed scientific articles we've accumulated in one place because I'm doing a new documentary on this. Quote, this is from one of the scientists. Research studies show that genetically modified crops have harmful effects on laboratory animals in feeding trials and on the environment during cultivation. They have increased the use of pesticides and have failed to increase yields. Our report concludes that there are safer and more effective alternatives to meeting the world's food needs. Another author, Dr. John Fagan, a former genetic engineer who in 1994 returned the National Institutes of Health grant money of $614,000 due to concerns about the safety and ethics of the technology. And he said, quote, crop genetic engineering as practiced today is a crude, imprecise, and outmoded technology. It can create unexpected toxins or allergens in foods and affect their nutritional value. Recent advances point to better ways of using our knowledge in genomics to improve food crops that do not involve genetic modification. Quote, over 75% of all GM crops are engineered to tolerate being sprayed with an herbicide. This has led to the spread of herbicide-resistant superweeds and has resulted in massively increased exposure of farmers and communities to their toxic chemicals. Epidemiological studies suggest a link between herbicide use and birth defects and cancer. These findings fundamentally challenge the utility and safety of GM crops. But the biotech industry uses its influence to block research by independent scientists and uses its powerful public relations machine to discredit independent scientists whose findings challenge this approach. I'll just stop there because tomorrow I'm going to do 30 reasons why you should never buy anything genetically engineered. And I, in the way of food, and I will go over that tomorrow. But every single day, we can support with independent science why genetically modified is dangerous and why they should have done everything possible to have passed that food labeling bill. So the fix was in. The legislators in Washington's Democratic and Republican alone, along the line of bipartisanship, accepted the word, the information, and the money from the lobbyists for the genetically modified companies. Just remember that the next time you think about the honesty and integrity of your representative, who's really just a shill for the pharmaceutical industry and the genetic engineering industry. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Stations throughout the United States and Canada. I'm Gary Knoll. In this segment of our program, we're going to be speaking with some people who can give us some insights on the biophysics behind the double helix water and its purported healing properties. I'm joined on the line by two individuals. The first is Dr. Shuwei Yin Lo. He is the chairman of DNY Laboratories, which is at the forefront of research in double helix water. He received his doctorate in theoretical physics under a Nobel laureate at the world-renowned University of Chicago Physics Department. He is also a visiting professor and lecturer at many leading academic institutes, including California Institute of Technology, Beijing's Academy of Sciences, the Stanford University Accelerated Center, Denmark's Institute of Theoretical Physics, and others. He's published about 75 peer-reviewed papers in physics journals and has over 60 patents related to the field of atomic and subatomic particle science. In more recent years, Dr. Lo has focused on the biophysical properties of water within the human body, with special attention on stable water clusters, with consequently, it has led him to discover the double helix water. He has also researched the biophysics of acupuncture and pioneered new ways to understand the meridian systems as channels of natural clustered water. This led to his book, The Biophysics Basis for Acupuncture and Health. And more on double helix water is at his website, doublehelixwater.com. Also joining Dr. Lo is Kathy Perot, who has been using double helix water since 2009 and is now the president of Cobalt Distributing Company. Normally, we do not invite people who are selling something on the air because we have no independent way of verifying veracity, but we'll be asking her a few questions. Nice to have you with us, Dr. Lo.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on your show.
Dr. Lo, first explain to the people who do not understand, what is double helix water? How does it differ from regular water or spring water or tap water or reverse osmosis or distilled water?
Double helix water is a special kind of stable water cluster that we discovered 17 years ago. And then it's a newly discovered solid phase of water that does not melt at room temperature and pressure. So it's a fundamental discovery in physics. And we are very proud to be associated with its discovery, and its discovery first through the atomic force microscope. That can see atoms, okay, and then we see it, and you know, we picture, you see, you will see the proof, and we see one of them actually has a double helix shape that is on the cover of our book, Double Helix Water. So that's why we call it double helix water that has healing effect on people. So it's different from ordinary water because it's highly polar charged. It's very, very pure water. If you look at the bottle that we have when we come out from the manufacturing, it's 18.2 mEq ohm. The conductivity is the the lowest or the resistivity is highest. As soon as it come out, exposed to the air, the carbon dioxide and the dust, then immediately turn to 6 in a few minutes, turn to 1 mech ohm, and then several minutes later is less than 1 mech ohm. So when we manufacture, we preserve the very, very pure water. It's none of the water in market has that. And also that's why when we ask people to dilute it in use, to do it in distilled water, so you get the best benefit.
Where do you find double helix water naturally, in the body or in nature?
I speculate that it's actually when the Earth at the beginning of, before the beginning of life, is very pure, okay, 3 billion years ago. And then that we have very pure water in the atmosphere that come from rain, and then it is double helix water was formed, and that's where life come from, and that's where double helix water and DNA is come from. And that's most likely some of it still being manufactured or made in nature in the height of very high mountain like Mount Himalayas. But now we discover it, we make it in the lab, then it can be much more concentrated, it can be quality controlled. We have to count how many double helix water, this stable water cluster in the water we make, so we know precisely the amount and the nature, and we check that it has no organic in it, and it also we know from atomic force microscope it also have very, very strong electric charge. So we are very high up on all front in the physics side, especially because I'm really a physicist. We branch off to use physics to explain Chinese medicines.
All right. Now, recently, on different non-commercial radio programs, there were premiums offered for your book and water. And in the process, I heard claims made that, I don't believe should have been made, because when you make a medical claim, you're assuming that that product has met FTC and FDA requirements that has been proven. What can you show as actual proof in human studies that you could say, we did these human studies and this is what we found using this water? Could you share that with us, please?
Okay, definitely we have a disclaimer. We don't have FDA approval, and we don't claim any cure or diagnostic any disease. But during study, we actually have a UCLA professor Bonavide to verify that it stimulate the immune response more than 10 years ago, and lately he's been a staunch supporter of our work, and he's still done some work. He just finished an experiment which is very, very exciting.
Okay, and but so did you at any time support him financially, or his research, or royalties, or in any way have any financial connection with him?
We actually donate the money, then he used to donate the money with no strings, so he can do whatever he wants to do.
Okay, but if you donate the money, it's not there's no strings. But we look, it's for each person to decide for themselves. I'm just trying to get to the base of what we can actually prove or not prove. I'm concerned when something is said that makes promises, then the promises are not fulfilled. But can they be fulfilled? In other words, could you go through now, please, and based upon your best evidence with hard proof, show us what can happen if we drank double helix water?
Well, I actually have myself done it for the last 10 years on using thermograph to see it. In fact, we go to conference, medical professional, MDs and chiropractic acupuncturists go, and then we show them that it actually helped them in 15 minutes, okay, objectively. So all my work are based on objectively observed thermographs, so you actually can see it yourself. You see, thermographs are very nice. You actually can see yourself right away. We see the picture right away together, all right? So it's a very accurate number. It's not only a number at the end where 10% or 15% get well. We see it in 15 minutes that it actually improved.
Improve what? What were you measuring in the thermograph?
We basically measure the body surface temperatures. And because the meridian system of Chinese medicine said the surface of the property, like the acupuncture point, is related to internal organs, so from that, we can tell the internal organs' state of affair. We interpret the hotness spot, hot spot or hot lines on the thermograph as the problem in the organs that these meridians pass through. So the interpretation is through Chinese meridian theory.
Okay,
so
but if you can understand, yes. Dr. Lo, I'm not being argumentative, I was just trying to understand. When people make a statement that by taking a particular thing, a disease will go away, they'll have these recoveries, or they can be promised such great strength and energy, if they're stating this is based upon some theories, and you would first have to wash that theory through Chinese medicine and through Chinese theory and the temperature control of a body, we could understand that. But without that whole idea of this is all based upon supposition, because if I gave you a high degree 200,000 unit chili pepper, I can cause a thermatic achievement remarkably similar, and so could acupuncture, and so could meditation. We can measure this. I'm just trying to see what clinical studies do we have where you can say these people had these conditions before they were taking it, nothing else was changed, their diet was the same, exercise the same, no supplements, medication, and 3 months, 6 months, or whatever it is later, upon independent verification, medical diagnosis, here's what they don't have. Do you have any data like that, sir?
We have, as I said, Professor Bonavides at UCLA has the working on it, and then I'm working on it, and we have a European University professor making an independent study, which we don't pay, so they are doing it. So we are doing all this that...
Okay, but you don't have the clinical study finished
USC
yet.
Now. USC also, the most remarkable is USC professor doing my study. She received no money from us, and then she actually have the study is mice, okay? It's animal model. And then he has a litter of mice, genetically altered mice that has autistic behavior, then a litter, so of eight, four not rubbing the cream, four rubbing the cream. We now have a cream which has WX water in it. And then we are still going on, but it's remarkable that the thermograph of these mice show remarkable difference. And so we are keep going on with that. And then Professor Xi of UCSC received no money on it.
Okay. All right. Well, again, from what I was listening to when I was hearing all this pitching and promotion, I would have thought that there had been a lot of clinical studies with absolute reversal based upon, it's entirely possible that overly enthusiastic people can take something that has some basis, legitimate
we
basis,
and extend
it. We are
very careful in the bottle saying that we claim nothing, okay? And you are the one that telling us what happens.
Okay, but when people tell you what happens, and I can tell you this myself, you have to be very cautious, because if you step over that line and people then, by inference or by statement, by yourself or others, then if you can't prove it, then if it doesn't work, or someone then feels, well, gee whiz, you know, it's just another thing I was led to believe would be this miracle. I'm just hopeful that you come up with some really good clinical studies independently done without your financing, because if you're financing it on any level, that could, even though it doesn't necessarily have to, but it could bias the outcome. But I hope that you have results showing other than just temperature or changes, because I can get temperature changes from 100 different ingredients, but it doesn't then prove that those same ingredients are able to actually reverse disease. And I've done 47 clinical studies, so it's something I'm familiar with.
But
But if you're selling products and you're manufacturing products and you have these patents, please, sir, show us the hard clinical studies, and we'll be happy to say yes. Until that time, I just want to know what it is that is able to match the claims made. And that's all
we make
asking.
No claims, sir.
Well,
we
a lot of people are making claims on your part. Then I would
but
suggest you listen
to the
radio.
Those people, we don't pay them, okay? If they make their claim, then that's that they make the claim, not us. So
I understand that when a radio station is making its money by making claims, even if you're not, then they should be asked then to reframe the state only what you can scientifically prove. Otherwise, it's misguided.
What I said is all scientifically proven, okay?
Okay.
I'm a theoretical physicist, okay? I assure you all the physics paper do not have this thing that, you know, no physicist would have money to pay their research, okay? They get money either from government or from some place. But since the result is so far remote from any practical application, no one in physics or chemistry, which we have plenty, or biology, have this requirement. But medical claim, we understand, is very different, and we always say that, okay? It's not that if people don't we do not make clinical claim again and again, all right? That is the bottom line of us.
Okay, you may not, I'm not questioning that, but other people have, because I've heard it with my own ears. So I believe that there might
be... We didn't pay them, okay? We didn't pay them. They have First Amendment to say that.
I understand, but I'm not questioning First Amendment, sir. I'm just questioning someone going on a non-commercial radio station and using that to entice people to buy something that may or may not benefit them. And if it doesn't, then we should know. And if it does, then promote it. I'm all for promoting things at work. But I was also one of those people who spoke with the developer of the first algaes that were making outrageous claims. And unfortunately, it did not end up to be as true as people believed, and they spent a lot of money. I hope that yours comes forth, and I'd be happy to have you on the show when you have your studies showing actual reversal of disease or actual stimulation of the immune system at levels in human beings that we can measure before and after, so you can get the credit that you deserve for putting all this effort in. It's not a denouncement of your work or your ethic. It is merely a questioning to see, are the standards there so we can all be on board, at least something that was theoretical. That's what you're telling me. And I have to understand Chinese medicine, the theory of Chinese medicine, which and especially the meridians, and especially temperature changes, in order to appreciate what this might or might not do. In any case, I wanted to have you on to at least explain it to me and to this audience, your Double Helix Water. You have a book on it. People can read it. People can go to your website, doublehelixwater.com, and get additional information. I'm not going to have on the other person because I don't want to invite someone on whose primary position is to represent the economic interest of whatever's being sold in this. So thank you very much, Dr. Lowe, for being with us today. I'm Gary Noll.
Right.
Back in a moment. Please stay with us. The clip today, so I'll save the clip tomorrow on gas hydrofracking, and it's about a 9-minute clip. It's from the director and writer of Gasland, who's done a really good follow-up after the gas industry spent tens of millions of dollars lobbying to try to discredit him, those who would agree with him that the gas hydrofracking is dangerous, and then he simply eviscerates and deconstructs their arguments. And yet they were the ones who were brought before the congressional hearings. They were the ones who were invited at the state level to be the experts. And when you hear what is said and you see the logic and reason of it and the proof of it, you'll understand how we've been had. In any case, that will be tomorrow. I'll play that uninterrupted and then ask you to call the Governor Cuomo, and share your concerns that he not open up the pristine areas of New York or the poor areas of New York, which are one and the same, that are on that Marcellus Shale, so we would end up having polluted water, which would be inevitable. It wouldn't maybe. It would be absolutely we would have polluted water, because everywhere they've done this, we've had polluted water and sick people. Let's go over and say hello to Lou Ann Panessi, and I'm going to open up our lines now for people in this audience who would like to call in and share their points of view upon the idea that we as a society should have the right to have a dialogue with those in power about why we're not going to accept their ideas, their solutions to anything anymore, since they have literally betrayed us on everything. Your thoughts on that, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Also, as of today, I am opening up our website for you for free to see the new, very powerful documentary, The War on Health, plus my introductory 30-minute or 20-minute talk, plus the audience response at the end. All you have to do is get a friend to watch it. Go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNall.com and watch this film and show it with other friends. It's how we, the people, can share information that can empower us to make positive choices. Also, we have our newest article from Dr. Nancy and myself that just went up over the weekend on Gardasil, the fraud of Gardasil, how we were sold Gardasil. Part two of that is coming in another 5 or 6 days, but part one is up there now. Read about the dangers of Gardasil that are in the scientific literature, the fraud of all everything, and why the states are trying to mandate it, and why we need a moratorium on it until that time that we can get the right science before the public. So that's up there today. The movie will be posted later today. Now, for those of you who are we're coming up to the end of this land-based conversation, you can go to a telephone number and listen over the phone or listen over the Internet once we can continue on after this. That number, which is at no additional charge other than what you're normally paying, but it's really important, it's for everyone out there, and I'll give you this number, is for all those of you, many of it, by the way, tens of thousands, I was informed, were almost 60,000 people listening over the telephone, because they're not any longer having to stay in a car or by radio. They can listen to it anywhere. And I'll give you that number in just a moment. But let's say hello to Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. Boy, you couple the issue with gas hydrofracking with Indian Point with New York State, and you really have a perfect storm. Amazing information. I have an email here from Robert from Los Angeles, and he's asking, he says, I heard about this trade bill, and he's saying that he understands that a lot of unions got screwed. And he's asking you, what is wrong with the current trade bill, and why? And finally, he says, should we support it or not?
Absolutely no one who has a right energy should support this bill. By the way, the number is 832-280-0066. 832-280-0066 if you want to continue listening when we say goodbye to our local station. First, it is the Trans-Pacific Trade Pact. It's a partnership. And this is even worse than NAFTA or GATT or CAFTA. What it is, the United States is bringing in Australia and Brunei and Chile and Malaysia, New Zealand, Peru and Singapore and Vietnam and Canada and Mexico. They're all joining together in order to create a new trade agreement that would usurp and bypass all domestic laws. In effect, let's just give you an example here. The current proposals, if enacted, what is called the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Trade, Trans-Pacific Partnership, if they get this enacted, it would grant what are called extreme powers to corporations. Then those corporations are no longer held accountable as corporations. They become quasi-legal entities. And that means the local states and the federal government would have to dismantle their own environmental, consumer safety, and labor protection laws because they would be considered unfairly challenging the profit margins of these corporations. Now, that seems insane, doesn't it? So they build upon NAFTA, and that means that foreign investors, including China, could end up circumventing virtually all of our domestic regulations. It is completely anti-union, and so I'm just surprised that the unions haven't been out in force, because this would just decimate any union or pro-activist position. This is against labor. It is against the environment. It is against common sense. This would reduce people to being sweatshop laborers again. Now, mind you, these corporations already sponsor sweatshops around the world. They would flourish everywhere in these countries. But where we in the United States would say, well, you can't dump a toxic chemical from your manufacturing into our rivers. Oh, yes, they can. You can't get people to work for under a minimum wage. Oh, yes, you can. You could have someone work for 20 cents an hour if you chose to, because that's how the law is written. It's written so that the corporation that is doing the investing, that is owning the business or the company or the chemicals, they have the final say-so. You do not. Your state and federal government do not. This is the Trojan horse. So when I was against NAFTA and against CAFTA and against all these other trade deals because they were anti-union, this is eviscerating the unions. There won't be a union left anywhere in the world that will have any strength at all if they allow the Trans-Pacific Partnership to exist. All right? So it's bad to the bone. And this is what they're promoting. And, you know, they've done all this in secret. They've had nothing out in the open. They've allowed no open dialogue on this, because they knew that the moment anyone saw the details on this, they would immediately say, my God, you've just given the sovereignty of the United States to our own health, our health workers. You now want to have a pesticide that is so toxic it would ban the United States, now cannot be banned? You want something that a food that would be terrible, that could kill people, made in another country, that we don't want it in the United States, but now our own FDA would be usurped and the power would go back to the corporation, and you would have independent three-panel judge, all coming from the business community, to decide how much fine should be leveled against a country that doesn't want to allow a toxic ingredient in? There's already precedent for this. Over $800 million has had to be paid out by governments, by states, who didn't want something bad or toxic in their environment, but the trade laws allowed for complete profits that would be lost over a reasonable period of time given to the company. So you could be in business just manufacturing bad products that never get into a country because the country bans it, but they have to pay you for it. It is bad to the bone, Luann, and that's our government. That's our White House. That's Congress. That's our trade representative working against the American people. Gee whiz, why should we be surprised? They've all worked against the American people, if the American people ever woke up enough to see what kind of tyranny exists in their name. Next question.
Okay. Well, I had an interesting call the other night, and this was a person who was an engineer at a non-commercial radio station, which you contribute lots of money to through all of your broadcasts and pitching. And I found it interesting because he called me to share with me a litany of judgments and criticisms about you and your website and your show and your behavior and on the air. And I was stunned. And quite frankly, correct me if I'm wrong, you're paying this guy's salary by doing the work that you do on the radio. People may agree or disagree with you, and that's fine. That's the whole idea of your show, is to bring in differing points of view and to have people use their own knowledge and background and information to make their own opinions. I just found it very interesting that this man felt that he should just... It was okay to, certainly, I didn't feel it was okay for him to use me as a go-between between you and him, number one. But number two, I just found it very interesting that someone whose salary you're paying has the audacity to sit and hold you in judgment. And I want to know what your thoughts are on that.
Are you familiar with the lyricist Russell Linz? He
No.
said, cynicism, the intellectual cripple substitute for intelligence. All right. And also Sidney Harris said, a cynic is not merely one who reads bitter lessons from the past. He is one who is prematurely disappointed in the future. So take a look. Take a look at those individuals in our society, in any position, whether it's on non-commercial radio or television, who they walk around with a bitter attitude. And all they do is look for someone to associate their bitter attitude with, as if that is their right and their obligation to justify their bitterness in life. If it weren't for me, they were being bitter towards, it'd be someone else. The difference is, I don't have to know this person. Whether I pay for their salaries through the money that I raise from non-commercial radio is really irrelevant. I'm not there to pay salaries. I'm there to share a message to people who are more interested in surrendering the cynicism and negativity and the toxic energy and embrace something that represents a true human value. Solutions that affect and empower all of us, not just a selective few. So if not everybody can appreciate that, that's all right. That's their right. But there are more than enough who can. And that's what we focus on. Thank you for your comment. Luann, we're all out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. This evening you will hear one of the most powerful programs you've ever heard on the Progressive Commentary Hour. We'll be doing a two to three hour special on false flags, meaning things our government did and lied about them that caused enormous suffering and conflict to the tune of millions of people dead. That'll be tonight, 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Next up, Dr. Lynn and Vicky Saputo. Wonderful show, Prescription for Health. You won't want to miss it. Stay tuned.